Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Richie McCormack here in studio. Hello.
I'm just taken with Alison wearing a flat cap to my left here. He looks like somebody at a farmer's protest.
Thanks for that, Richie. Excellent contribution to kick things off with. And Ronan Mullen here in studio as well. Hello.
Joe, how are things?
Ooh, who's feeling worse right now? Deontay Wilder or Ireland? That's the question we have.
The entire country of Ireland, Joe.
Dear, oh dear. Well, let's go in chronological order then. I presume you got up at 4 a.m. to watch this.
I stayed up, Joe. I'm regretting that now. Feeling a little bit jet-lagged.
That's always the dilemma, to stay up or to get up.
Yeah, it depends on the fight. So increasingly, if it's not a huge one, I'll just watch it the next morning, turn off my phone, standard enough. Now, because it's so, basically it's more difficult to avoid the result of this one. Plus, I was dying to watch it, so I obviously stayed up. And it was worth it. It was just an incredible event, an incredible spectacle. And it delivered, much like the first one, even though that fight probably wasn't as thrilling or pulsating, the drama which punctuated the 12th round obviously made up for all of that. This was just gripping from the get-go.
Because everything Andy Lee told us last Monday came to fruition. The Fury approach from the opening bell, quite literally, was to move into the centre of the ring and go after Wilder. And Wilder, given his power, generally is not used to boxing on the back foot. Usually people are a bit more wary of him. But Fury came right at him and made it uncomfortable from moment one and basically beat the snot out of him, you would have to say.
This is the thing. So hiding in plain sight, both in the preamble and in the fight itself. So we were talking to Andy this day last week, and somewhat tongue-in-cheek, we were saying, don't give the game plan away. And he basically did. He told us exactly what they were going to do, as you said, stepped on the front foot. It's almost, he set the tone in the first round, because Wilder had a little bit of success in that first round, landed two good right hands, and tonally, Fury just made it quite clear, much like if people want to check out what Muhammad Ali did in his fight with George Foreman, the opening seconds, Muhammad Ali all but sprints to the middle of the ring basically to say to the puncher, you know, you're not going to boss me around. Evander Holyfield did it with Mike Tyson. It's an age-old thing, but it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
And much like those were almost metaphorical statements in a way, this was just how the fight was going to play out. Fury wasn't saying, you know, you're not going to boss me around. He actually flipped the tables and bossed Wilder around throughout. And I don't think anybody really saw that coming.
Andy Lee had mentioned that they were going to put more authority into Fury's jabs, and that was certainly the case as well. He was hurting Wilder with the jabs. Wilder threw one decent right hand in the first round, which Fury just about rolled enough with to take the real sting out of it. But other than that, there was very little to trouble him. And then the first knockdown came with 30 seconds left in round three. That was Wilder's first time on the canvas in 10 years, 30 fights ago. And from that moment on, one, his ear was bleeding. And in commentary, they were speculating that his eardrum had ruptured.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that wasn't the case. He did need 7 stitches in his ear afterwards. But one of the reasons they also speculated about the rupture to the eardrum was the blood, firstly, but also that his balance was just gone. And from that point on, in the third round with 30 seconds to go, his legs were shaky, his balance was off, and we were just counting down to the inevitable.
Yeah, and the jab was a key thing. Like, in many cases, and you would be taught this as an amateur, that it's a complementary, supplementary punch where you're basically setting up stronger shots with your jab. Whereas, as Andy touched on last week, this was going to be almost a weapon. He weaponized the jab, and that totally took Deontay Wilder's game plan away. And as you touched on at the start, by making him retreat, you're taking away the leverage, because we always speculate, where does the power come from? He looks quite slimly built, skinny legs, but it's because he can get such extension on those, and his wingspan is massive, that's how he can knock these guys out. But Fury never, basically at any point in the fight, allowed him to do that, and he took the play away.
Probably could have ended a round sooner, I would have thought. Yeah. Wilder was just gone, he was struggling. In the end, Mark Breland, his assistant trainer, threw in the towel. Wilder wasn't happy, that's always the way. He was a career high 231 pounds, we should say. Fury was 273, so 19.5 stone. They were both as heavy as they could possibly be in this fight, which is an interesting point.
3 stone, and the higher way you go up, the weight classes, things change. In the heavyweight landscape, it's a lot different to maybe featherweights, where the skill differential is very much more on show. Whereas in Wilder fights, and even the other day, you could kind of sense he was still always in it, even though in retrospect, he probably really wasn't. But like 3 stone in real terms, when Fury's leaning on him, that's like Carl Frampton fighting Carl Froch. You know, that's the difference in weight there.
Both fighters have a losing rematch clause in their contracts. I don't think publicly anyway, there's any great appetite for a rematch. I haven't heard anybody today saying, geez, I can't wait to watch the third fight here. It was just such a comprehensive victory that that's done. Now, Wilder obviously can invoke the rematch and make a ton of money, and he may well do that. But I wonder if they're even thinking, if that camp are thinking, well, yeah, we really were just outdone here, and let's bow out with some kind of grace. It's hard to turn down all the money.
Not true. But like, just because there wasn't a showreel knockout to end things, this was about as brutal a one-sided beatdown as you're going to see at the apex of boxing. And you touched on Mark Breland, he's getting some stick, especially from his co-trainer, who said, I wouldn't have thrown the towel in that situation.
Oh, no.
And Breland, who was a really good fighter, former Kronk fighter, ironically,
yeah,
brilliant amateur, won a world title as a professional. Like, he knows what he's talking about.
Oh.
And people, you see it on social media.
It could have went around earlier.
I know, but in social media, you see it in all walks of life, people being wise after the event, and the worst thing can happen in boxing, and it does regularly, sadly.
Yeah.
And people can be wise after the event. This is a classic case of get the fighter out. As you said, it could have been a little bit earlier even.
Mm.
So they saved him for another day. He can come again, maybe, you know, build from here.
Mm.
I'd say target a rematch. I know it's contractually enforceable now, but if he gets another couple of fights under his belt, he could easily fight the winner of Joshua Fury this time next year or something like that. I just can't see it feasible that he could jump back in after such a one-sided loss.
There are mandatory challengers out there for Fury, but a unification bout would take precedence. So it's over to you, Joshua. Mm. And how much money can we make out of this thing?
Yeah, and this is such a substantial fight, and often you need some time and space to sort of put it in perspective, but you can quite safely say this would be the biggest British fight ever, you know, in boxing history. And then,
what would the competition be?
I don't know. It's like, there's nothing even comparable. This is an undisputed for the most coveted prize in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's streets ahead. And then, like, the Klitschko reign was what it was. We've had some brilliant fights in the last 12 months, but this puts everything in the halfpenny place for this century, really, in boxing terms, especially in the heavyweight division. And like, I just can't get over the change in tack. It was such a brave thing to do. Like, in what walk of life would you be so successful in the first fight doing a certain thing and then change the habits of a lifetime to in this huge encounter, which was watched by everybody, had Super Bowl-like coverage in America.
Mm.
And Fury went in there with a game plan he'd never enforced before.
He seems like the ideal blank canvas.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know if there's, I think it's something that Andy maybe touched upon before. Like, he was never taught the basics when he was boxing. But just in general terms, Fury seems like somebody who's so wide open. Like, there's aspects of his private life, the potholes that he's walked into before with his mouth, I think are all part of received knowledge from one way or the other, whether it's religious or whether it's from his community or whatever. He's walked himself into trouble with that before, but he's such an open blank page that people can come to him with suggestions and he'll immediately take them on board and he'll immediately enact them. And I think that's a little bit of what we saw as well on Saturday, and even, I guess, in the previous Wilder fight.
Andy Lee was on with Owen this morning on OTBAM, and he reiterated the point that Fury has not really been taught the basics of boxing. He was saying things like, you'll see him in camp previously down the years and he'll do some flashy combinations at a punching bag, but that's not actually translatable into a massive fight against top class opposition. And he's been so talented and so physically gifted that he hasn't had to really learn the basics of boxing, like a jab, which is effective. So Andy was saying, we had 8 weeks with him. Give us a few more weeks and we'll see what we can really do with this guy, because he is just uber talented.
But like, so he beats Vladimir Klitschko. No one gave him a prayer in that fight, went to Dusatov and beat him.
The Nandrolone thing hangs over that fight for me.
The Klitschko one?
Yes.
Well, as Richie said, a lot of stuff hangs around Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
But just on the point, it
castrated wild boar.
Uncastrated, Joe.
Sorry, of course.
Huge, if it was castrated, yeah, no problem.
We're having a different conversation.
Uncastrated wild boar was his undoing there.
He
maintains his innocence.
Huey as well, which is very unfortunate that the two lads were struck down by the same thing.
Same boar.
Unbelievable.
Did they eat the same boar?
A ball each.
You'd like
perhaps.
You'd like to presume so.
So that is an asterisk for sure.
Yeah, but just from an approach point of view, so Peter Fury was in his corner for that fight, his uncle. Obviously, Fury went off the rails after that fight, came back with Ben Davison in his corner. Ben Davison did a pretty sterling job, all things considered. As I said, he won the fight quite clearly.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the biggest robberies probably since, and people might remember, Lennox Lewis against Evander Holyfield, which was also for the heavyweight title. Lewis won it, all ends up, but it was ruled a draw, much like the first fight in this instance. And what Lennox Lewis did for the rematch was just hammer the hammer. He went back and did what he did the first time, except better, and won clearly. What Fury did is change everything up. And it's unprecedented almost, I think.
Yeah. Lads, is it the greatest comeback in sport? discuss, says Pat.
Well, what's the competition there?
Yeah, that's very Tiger hard to Woods. Throw at us, Pat. Give us some comparisons here to get the ball rolling. Tiger Woods. Oh, I think Fury beats Woods. Like, Woods just had to come. Okay, there was the psychological trauma of the breakdown, but he had put that to bed pretty quickly. He won 5 times on tour in 2013. His back blew up. He got it fused eventually, and he came back and he won. So it is unbelievable, but I don't think he was in as dark a place as Fury. So I'm putting Fury above Woods.
Well, when Woods won the Masters, my immediate comparison was Muhammad Ali coming back from basically being blackballed out of the army service and coming back to beat George Foreman, ultimately to win the world title. So
what age was Ali, give or take, when he came back to beat Foreman then, though?
He was 33, I think.
Was he that old? Okay. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I don't know, Pat. We'll be sitting here in silence for 10 minutes trying to think of things to compare it to. Text us the competition. At the moment, we'll put Fury in at number one, and it's your job as listeners to
knock him off his perch.
Pat, what a bore of a rugby match. An absolute bore. Some of our formerly good players are at the end of their rugby careers. Keeping things in perspective. Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, like I said yesterday.
It's really bad.
It was like that game yesterday was the equivalent of checking your bank balance after a big weekend. Because you look at it, you're like, oh, Christ.
I know it's not going to be good.
And then you realise the next month is going to be a bit crap as a result. Like, and it basically took the air out of absolutely everything.
But France are back.
That's not much comfort just now. I mean, it's great. Can we just be miserable for a day or two?
I don't know. France being back is a good story. No,
the game in Cardiff was a phenomenon. It was just so reminiscent of 2019 Dublin. It was just like, here we are. For the crack, we're actually just going to throw the ball to Tuilagi again and he's going to crash that up and you won't be able to stop him. Now we're going to squeeze you into your own 22. You won't be able to get out.
Yeah.
You'll try and overplay again.
Yeah.
Like, so they all came out afterwards and said, oh, we overplayed under pressure. And I was thinking, this is exactly what you all said after at Dublin. So was there not a conversation that based on the possibility England might do this something similar to us again in Twickenham this time? How are we going to play our way, or to the point, not play our way out of this? And that's they just didn't seem to have a go-to plan. But in the main, it just looked like men against boys. There's just no way you're going to be able to move up the field with any kind of coherence, and we are going to squeeze the living hell out of you. And Mauro Itoje is your worst nightmare. Nice to meet you, everyone.
And as Chrissy Devine might say, to add a little bit of spice to things, a couple of brain farts from Jacob Stockdale and Johnny Sexton. Well, yeah. More than a couple in Sexton's case.
With the Sexton kicking thing, Sexdale, combined them there. The Sexdale tries. The Sexton kicking thing was quite interesting because he said to Sinead Cassan afterwards that he had had a few of them in training. And you might remember the Wales game, he had a really bad one as well. So there's obviously, I'm sure, like any sport,
chip and yips, Joe.
You go through ups and downs with your technique. So that must be quite a tricky thing to go out onto the field, knowing you've had a few of them during training, that miss is in there. And of course, under pressure, twice, just horrific kicks. Ultimately, in the short term, I wouldn't worry too much about his kicking.
There's something about his technique, though, and he's spoken about it at length, how he's tweaked things over the years, but there's something unforgiving about the way he strikes the ball, where if you miscue, it's really going to go drastically wrong. There's nothing languid about the way he kicks the ball, if you get what I mean.
He can snap at it.
Kind of snaps at it, whereas you see other goal kickers who kind of flow through the ball,
and
there's a bit more give, I think, whereas he... It's kind of
I agree with that. I thought that down the years as well. I have a bit more sympathy with the try he gave away, for want of a better word, because the bounce was tricky. It's a rugby ball, and just, you know, bounce is weird. Trying to get your hands to it, hot potato, done. Whereas Stockdale, one should have caught the ball before it bounced, was the general conclusion of anybody I've heard who's played rugby. Like, he had a 7-metre head start, he should have caught the ball, and then once it bounced, he just needed to jump on that ball. I couldn't work out if he was hoping it would dribble out over the end line or if he just was unsure of the bounce and was waiting for the right moment to catch it. But that looked rather silly when England player comes around and just touches down with ease. So that's kind of where Stockdale's game seems to be at the moment, just that little bit indecisive, not happening. How much credit in the bank do you get for 2018?
That on a day when a lot of people underperformed, it's not great to have one of these things that people can so easily point to as a huge flaw. And people had been criticising him in that breakout season that his defence wasn't great, he wasn't contributing hugely in open
essentially
play.
He was only tries.
Exactly. But now those tries aren't there anymore, so it's very illuminated what's going on.
England and all bigger sides have our number. They just look at us and they say, right, we can squash these. Mm. And that without putting too fine a point on it, we have not figured a way around that. Just boxed in trouble. So I don't know. Liam Toland, Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. There are lots of texts in on greatest comebacks, which I'll get to presently. But first, Richie, the coronavirus.
Yeah. Minister for Health Simon Harris says Ireland's Six Nations meeting with Italy at the Aviva on March 7th may be a concern due to fears over the coronavirus. More than 100 cases of it have been confirmed in Italy, with several sporting events postponed in the north of the country across the weekend. The Pro 14 have postponed Ulster's trip to Benetton, as well as Osprey's game away to Zebre. Minister Harris has expressed concerns over large gatherings of people where the virus is concerned. Liverpool go in search of a record-equalling 18th Premier League win in a row this evening. Jurgen Klopp's side welcomes struggling West Ham to Anfield off the back of last week's Champions League defeat away to Atletico Madrid. Liverpool go with the tried and tested Alisson in goal. A back four, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Joe Gomez, Virgil van Dijk and Andrew Robertson. A midfield trio of Fabinho, Gini Wijnaldum and Naby Keita. Roberto Firmino, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah are the front three. There's no James Milner in their matchday squad. He is rested as a result of a muscle injury. For West Ham, 4-5-1 for them. Lucas Fabianski in goal. Jeremy Ngakia, Issa Diop, Angelo Ogbonna and Aaron Cresswell are their back four. Robert Snodgrass, Mark Noble, Thomas Suchek, Declan Rice, Felipe Anderson are across the midfield, and Mikel Antonio ploughs a lonely furrow up front. Kickoff at Anfield is at 8 o'clock. Three games survived the weather in the SSE Eritrea Premier Division. We've already had a couple of goals and a red card at the RSC, where Shamrock Rovers, off the back of their 6-0 thrashing of Cork City at the weekend, Friday night, are already 2-0 up away to Waterford. Rhys Marshall with the second of those goals. Andre Burley has been sent off for Waterford in the concession of one of those. Still to come, Bohemians are up against Sligo Rovers, 7:45 start to that. As there is at Oriel Park, where the champions Dundalk take on crisis club Cork City. Two games off, as I mentioned, St Pat's and Derry off at Richmond Park due to a waterlogged pitch. And there was snow in Ballybuffet, which meant that Finn Park was unplayable for the meeting of Finn Harps and Shelburne.
Lads, I'm far too lazy to Google stuff. What does lineal champion actually mean, Johnny?
Lineal means you're the man who beat the man. So if you track the history of boxing back from Tyson Fury, beat Klitschko, who, and if you date it all the way back.
Is this a bit like how everyone's related to one horse?
This is like a Tommy Welsh thing about the people in the...
No, they're just all legitimately related.
So go on, so give it to us. Because I have even described Fury as the lineal champion without necessarily wanting to have to explain it in detail on national radio.
Oh, yeah.
I know what it means, I just don't know the line.
Well, people are sick, like casual boxing fans, quote unquote, would be sick to hear WBC, WBA and all that kind of stuff. So you want a de facto champion, and the history of boxing, if you trace it all the way back to its origins,
yeah,
most divisions have this where you can see from the start right through. So yeah. Fury, if there was just one title, would be the guy. Even though Joshua has three of the four belts in the alphabet soup, I think most people, well, certainly after Saturday, the consensus champion is Tyson Fury.
And who was before him? Klitschko, surely.
Yeah.
And who was before Klitschko?
Lennox Lewis.
And who was before Lennox Lewis?
See, then it's getting a bit splintered. So you've got Evander Holyfield and Mike Tyson.
Yeah, okay.
It's split up a little bit. There's been sort of an aggregation of the belts where the WBO wasn't really considered a serious title. Now it is. So, but it's a lot more clarity in the division than there had been in the post-Klitschko era.
Mm. Lads, Niki Lauda, hands down, best comeback ever.
100%.
Yeah, that was insane.
40 days after dying, he was torched in a car and he decides, you know what, I'll go back at that again.
There's a few Niki Laudas in. So Fury doesn't quite beat Niki Lauda, does it? Don't think so. Fury was in a bad place.
Did you see that video?
Physically and mentally.
He wasn't dead.
Mm. Yeah.
Niki Lauda, and I can't stress this enough.
You're being told not to bang that table.
Yeah. This is just to get away from the point that Niki Lauda was dead.
Was he dead?
Technically, yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
Are you just saying that now?
No.
I'm going to check that. I never heard he was dead before.
Well, you know, more or less.
And what's your favourite comeback?
It's a different conversation entirely. Somebody says Bob
Rocky
Champion.
Balboa.
Rocky Balboa. Rocky Balboa. Bob Champion to win the National on Al Daniti. I may have pronounced that horse's name incorrectly. The jockey had recovered from cancer, and the horse had recovered from major injuries. That's Vincent in Dublin. We were just checking there. Bob Champion is 71 years of age. I sense a grand national nostalgia piece coming up in the show very soon, if we can get Bob on the line.
Shock that down, Ron.
That's a bit of research, a bit of a production meeting done, so we'll try and do something there. A few people saying Offaly against Limerick in 94.
We're awfully dead.
Well, pretty much. So, Where are we going next?
We'll stick with hurling, actually. Kilkenny have been dealt a huge blow, with Adrian Mullen set to miss the rest of the season. The young hurler of the year tore his cruciate knee ligament in yesterday's Allianz Hurling League draw with Clare at Nolan Park. Yesterday's game was Mullen's first start for the Cats this term after he secured a second club title of his career with Ballyhale Shamrocks last month, I should say. On the injury front, Tyrone dealt a blow of their own with all-star forward Colin McShane set to miss 5 months on the sidelines. The 24-year-old came off with an ankle injury in their 19-points defeat at the hands of Galway in the Allianz Football League. McShane is expected now to be a major doubt for the Red Hands Ulster quarter final against Donegal. That is in May.
Galway, the good times are back. 19 points defeat of Tyrone.
Is it any coincidence that France and Galway both have a resurgence at the same time? Probably.
Probably. And Colin McShane, that is so tough. 5 months, very serious ankle injury. That is a sliding doors moment in the last month of his life. From heading down under to now 5 months on the sidelines in Tyrone, started the new job. Ugh. You wish him well. That's horrific. Jack Conan?
Yeah, on the injury front, it's actually good news for him. He's poised to make his return from injury for Leinster in their Pro 14 trip to South Africa next month. The number 8 suffered a broken foot, you might remember, before Ireland's World Cup meeting with Japan in October. Conan has returned to training with his province, but he won't be involved in Friday's game with Glasgow. Meanwhile, Leinster assistant coach Felipe Contepomi has backed Johnny Sexton to recover from yesterday's Six Nations defeat to England. A handling error from the Ireland captain led to England's first try at Twickenham, while his kicking was also wayward, as we mentioned. But Contepomi, of course, a former number 10 himself, says Sexton is more than able to find form again.
Being a fly half is obviously a tough position, and the pressure that comes with kicking in front of a crowd such as Twickenham. And Johnny Sexton, granted, did not have his best day in a green jersey. He's had plenty of good days in a green jersey over the years. Probably wasn't his best game yesterday, but how does a player like Johnny get back up from a performance like that? Obviously, he'll be disappointed with himself and the team's performance, I guess, generally, especially in the first half. But someone like Johnny, how do you feel he'll react to that defeat yesterday?
Johnny, if there's one guy that I'll put all my money to react in the proper ways, Johnny, you know, in that sense, I've no doubt about that. I think he's a competitor, a natural competitor, and he's always trying to find the ways to improve. And even if he had a great game, he's always trying to improve on his game. Definitely yesterday wasn't one of his best game. I'd say it wasn't a great game for him, but it's one of those we've been talking about Johnny so many times, or you've been talking about so many times in a real positive way and having great games that he can allow himself to have a bad one. You know, I think it's he'll bounce back and for what I've seen since he came back from the World Cup and so on, he's in great shape, great form, training hard, and his appetite and he's hungry to get better and be a better player is still there. So I can't see why he can't have two great games against Italy and France.
Yeah. More of that coming between 8 and 9 o'clock, that full chat. Final story, Rich?
Yeah, Anthony Joshua's promoter, Eddie Hearn's, hoping for a unification showdown with Tyson Fury, and it can be made as soon as possible. He's actually told Ariel Helwani this evening he wants that fight next. Joshua is set to face mandatory challenger Kubrat Pulev for his IBF title, and Alexander Usyk is in line for his WBO belt. As we know, Fury stopped Deontay Wilder in the small hours of Sunday morning to become the WGC champion. May have a rematch clause for Mr. Deontay Wilder. And finally, Limerick hurling manager John Cowley's backed Richie English to return from injury. The 2018 All-Star defender has seen his season ended by a cruciate ligament injury of his own. Cowley was speaking after yesterday's 29 points to 221 win over Cork at Páirc Uí Chaoimh that maintained their 100% start to Division 1A in the Allianz Hurling League. The Limerick panel flew to Portugal this morning for a 1 week warm weather training camp.
Very good. Best comeback of all time, lads. Bobby Ewing in the shower. Well, indeed.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.